The title of this talk is Technology and Wholeness, Rethinking Catholic Teaching in Light of Oncofertility. I'm Paul Arretson, and I'm recording an enhanced podcast of this lecture. The enhanced podcast is based on a presentation I did at the Cleveland Clinic Foundation in early March of 2009. And the focus of the presentation is on oncofertility in relation to Catholic teaching. And what I want to do then at the start of this presentation is to talk a little bit about the emerging field of oncofertility, which is a field that combines multiple medical disciplines, particularly reproductive endocrinology and infertility specialists with oncologists. So the basic idea here is preserving fertility with cancer patients. Now, what I'm going to talk about today is based on my experience on the ethics advisory board of a group called the Oncofertility Consortium, which is a group headed out of Northwestern University and which has a large NIH grant that I'm going to talk about. But before I get any further, I want to thank the folks at Northwestern. As you'll see as we go through this slideshow, a lot of the slides come from the Oncofertility Consortium, and they very generously sent me a slide set to incorporate into this talk. So what I'm going to talk about is this work that the Oncofertility Consortium is doing. They have a $21 million NIH roadmap grant to explore various issues of this emerging field. And among the various kinds of investigations they're undertaking are the ones listed on the slide. So they're looking into follicle cryopreservation. They're looking into developing human follicles, maturing them in the laboratory. And to do this, they have a group, actually multiple groups working on what they refer to as the biomaterials core. This basically involves the kind of tissue engineering that would be necessary to mature a human egg in the laboratory and maintain the integrity of the structure and to mature it in a way that preserves its integrity and would lead to a mature egg that could be fertilized. There are a number of initiatives connected to what they refer to as the social science and oncofertility group of projects. And then, of course, a variety of training protocols for showing and expanding the techniques that are being developed in connection with this project. So what I'm working on is under the subset of the social science examination, and you see here just a slide that notes what part of the NIH grant this comes from. And the social science feature of the project is divided into five projects. And you have a very busy slide here. I'm not going to really spend any time on it, except to say that the work of the Ethics Advisory Committee or Board is under Project 1, which has to do with the ethical, legal, and, as we'll see, religious implications of oncofertility and particular aspects of oncofertility, which I'm going to talk about, namely ovarian tissue cryopreservation. So again, a very busy slide setting out what's involved with the first project of the consortium under the social science aspect. And there are a host of ethical issues that need to be addressed as this technology moves forward. And of course, the group is very interested in getting out in front of the ethical issues so that the way this technology is developed is informed by moral reflection from the start rather than simply responding to criticism or controversy that might emerge down the road. And among those pieces that are of interest to this group is thinking about the way religious traditions will respond to the various new technologies. And that's that's going to be my focus today. Okay, just a bit of background in terms of the context for oncofertility. Many of you may know these numbers in a general way, but it's useful to have them in front of us. The good news here is that cancer treatment is increasingly successful. The survival rate for cancer patients who are 45 years or younger is nearly 80% today. Lots of survivors are in their reproductive years. So that if, and the last bullet point here is one that always gets people's attention, by the year 2010, it's estimated that one in every 250 young adults in this country will be a survivor of a childhood cancer. So that's a very striking number. It represents the good news. The bad news, of course, is that cancer treatment that has led to these increased survival rates can also damage fertility. And so you have the intersection of increasing survival rates for patients of reproductive years at the same time that cancer treatment has rendered these individuals infertile. And so you have survivors who whose life expectancy is quite good. They want to live a normal and full and rich life. And for many individuals, that means having children. And yet the interventions that save their life in many cases will have rendered them infertile. So the idea here is to try to develop techniques that would preserve fertility for cancer patients. And these are of course different for men and women. For men and boys, adolescent boys, the standard method here of preserving fertility would be a banking sperm and freezing it. And so this is a technique that's been around for a long time. It's quite successful. People know a fair amount about this. Less well known are the options for women, and frankly the options here are not very good or numerous. The only real option that's recognized by the American Society of Reproductive Medicine as a legitimate technique as opposed to an experimental technique is freezing embryos. So if we look at the choices facing women who are about to undergo cancer treatment, you would get something like this diagram here. So really there are three options. The first one is freezing embryos before the onset of cancer treatment, or freezing oocytes, freezing mature eggs for storage before treatment, or the final one, a surgical procedure to retrieve ovarian tissue and then freezing the ovarian tissue. Now, the disadvantage of the first two options is that typically you have to use a cycle of hormone injections to cause or induce hyperovulation. So you have both the hormones, which themselves may in many cases be contraindicated in relation to the cancer that you're trying to treat, and inducing hyperovulation is going to delay the start of the cancer treatment, and that is often a really bad idea. In addition, the embryo freezing option is not particularly attractive for women or young girls who do not have a partner, who are not married, for example. The only way they could then freeze embryos and preserve the possibility of having offspring that were genetically related to them would be to find a sperm donor, and that obviously is complicated and makes it very much more controversial. And then finally, you have this relatively new technique called ovarian tissue transfer. Let me go back just a second. Or ovarian tissue transplantation. So you'd have a laparoscopic procedure to recover an ovary. You dissect it out and get cortical strips that would contain follicles, immature follicles, and those cortical strips could be frozen for use later. Now, once you have those cortical strips, you could either surgically return them to a woman's body after she's had cancer treatment, or to try to thaw them in the laboratory and mature them in the laboratory. And at least part of the grant work is for developing techniques for maturing follicles in the laboratory. And this slide depicts some of the work that the group at Northwestern is doing. They've had very good success with mice. They've grown immature eggs in the laboratory to a mature state, fertilized them, and gestated healthy mice through this. So they feel pretty good about this technique in mice. They've now moved on to do this with primates. And of course, the long-term goal is to introduce this technique for maturing follicles in the laboratory with humans. So at this point in my presentation, if I do this live, I usually show a little clip of the surgery that that harvests the ovarian tissue and dissects it to into cortical strips. And that doesn't really work in an enhanced podcast, so I'm not going to do that. But if you're interested in looking at some video about lots of these different techniques, here's a URL that you can visit, and there are I don't know, maybe a dozen videos on this website of a conference that took place in the fall of 2008 that documents various aspects of this Oncofertility Consortium research. It's a very good website, and I'm going to talk a little bit later about one of the videos that you could see there. Okay, in terms of the experience at Northwestern, before even we get to that, the experience generally with ovarian tissue freezing and thawing in terms of producing live births, there have been 7 so far to date that have been reported in peer-reviewed literature, and that 7 is as of the fall of 2008. There may have been another 1 or 2 since then, but that's a relatively current number, at least here in March of 2009. And of course, there's ongoing work of trying to develop follicle maturation techniques in humans. Now, in terms of the experience at Northwestern, they have a clinical research protocol underway, offering women facing cancer treatment various kinds of options. 3 here that you see: embryo cryopreservation, oocyte cryopreservation, and ovarian tissue cryopreservation, with the numbers that you see on the slide. Of the 19 patients who have chosen ovarian tissue transplant, you see the age range is from 16 years old to 40, and you see the various kinds of cancers that the women were facing when they chose to freeze ovarian tissue before undergoing cancer treatment. One footnote here: the youngest patient for whom this group has had a request to harvest ovarian tissue was a 3-year-old girl. So one of the ethical issues we'll want to get into here in a bit is just the very difficult issues that arise in relationship to undergoing ovarian tissue harvesting from minors as opposed to from adult women. This slide leads me into some of the ethical issues. Sherman Silber is a clinician in this field who's worked a lot with ovarian tissue freezing and preservation, thawing, and seeking to have children. And I'll come back and talk about a series of studies he's got underway. Now, one of the interesting things, and this is the reason I have this slide up, one of the interesting things that Silber and some of his colleagues are arguing is that this should not be a technique that's restricted only for medical reasons, for use in medical reasons. So, in other words, Silber and others are suggesting if we develop the techniques for ovarian tissue harvesting and cryopreservation, They should be available for women to use for whatever reason they choose. So it wouldn't be just to use this technique to preserve fertility in the face of cancer treatment, but this could be done for lifestyle reasons as well. So we'll see that there are lots of ethical issues that ovarian tissue transplant is going to raise. One is the use of ovarian tissue transplants for non-medical reasons. Excuse me, there are others, obviously. I just mentioned one before, which is the delicate issues that arise at the intersection of cancer and minors. And so the example of the three-year-old girl whose parents are seeking an ovarian tissue transplant, I think, captures some of the issues there pretty well. I mean, it's unclear who, for whom this technique is being requested. We have a three-year-old girl who couldn't possibly begin to understand the dimensions of the decisions that are being made here. So you're taking this young toddler and essentially responding to this young girl as a sort of sexual being, as a reproductive being. And, you know, this is taking place in the context of difficult decisions about cancer, perhaps a life-threatening situation. So there are lots of issues that we'll want to, as this technology moves forward, that we'll want to think about. But what I want to do today is talk about this in relation to Catholic teaching, because I think Catholic teaching can both provide an interesting framework for thinking about this technology, but I also think this technology helps us think about the Catholic framework as well. So what I want to do for most of the remainder of the talk is to put these two in conversation, that is, Catholic tradition and the work that's being done on ovarian tissue transplantation and oncofertility generally. So if we stick with ovarian tissue cryopreservation, you would have essentially what's depicted on the slide, that the tissue would be harvested before cancer treatment starts and then frozen. And once it's frozen, it can go, it can be thawed and then taken in one of two directions. As you're looking at the slide, if it goes to the right, you would thaw the tissue and then transplant it back into the woman who has survived the cancer. If all goes well, she would begin ovulating again if the transplant restarts sort of endocrine function for her, and then she would be able to conceive a child naturally. She would begin to ovulate mature eggs, and it basically would restore ovulatory function. If we go in the other direction, as you're looking at the slide to the left, we would thaw the frozen tissue in the laboratory, and then in the laboratory mature the eggs, take these immature follicles and put them in the right environment to sustain them, to mature, to produce mature eggs, which would then be fertilized in vitro and then returned to the woman's uterus. And if all went well, she would conceive a child through in vitro fertilization. Now, in terms of Catholic teaching, I think what's interesting here is that you would get a situation where the tradition, as I see it, would likely divide in relation to ovarian tissue cryopreservation and its use. I think if you go essentially to the right and return this tissue to the woman surgically and ovulation is restored and she has intercourse and conceives, that will be considered not problematic. And in fact, I want to come back and say, you know, why I think this, not only would it not be problematic, but it might actually, in fact, be deeply consistent with Catholic teaching. On the other hand, at least at first blush, I think if we go in the other direction involving thawing this tissue in the laboratory and then maturing it in the laboratory and fertilizing it there, there are going to be objections raised from within Catholic teaching on this. Now, of course, in saying this, I also need to indicate that the Vatican has not specifically addressed this technology. Even in the document that was released in the fall of 2008, in which Donum Vitae, the original document that took up reproductive technology, was brought up to date, even in this most recent document, which is called Dignitas Personae, the Vatican did not address this particular issue. But based on the previous teaching, I think we could anticipate this as the direction we'd go. And I'm saying this based on my reading of this document from 1987. This was an instruction issued by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Its Latin title was Donum Vitae. Its English title, Instruction on Respect for Human Life in Its Origin and on the Dignity of Procreation. And if we look at that document, what we see are a number of fundamental values set out. Two in particular, the life of the human being called into existence, and the second, the special nature of the transmission of human life in marriage. Now, the first value, of course, is the familiar notion that the embryo is a person, or at least needs to be treated as if it's a person, and accorded all the respect that one would accord a person. This is Catholic teaching. It's well known, it's familiar, and it leads to a number of prohibitions in the field of reproductive technology, including in vitro fertilization, pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, embryo cryopreservation, and of course stem cell research, most emphatically, opposition to abortion is founded on this value as well. But in the world of reproductive technology, certainly in vitro fertilization, PGD, freezing embryos, all of those would be ruled out as not respecting the full dignity of the embryo as a person. The second value is this notion that there's something special about the way human life is transmitted. And the idea here is less well known, but it's a very long-standing Catholic teaching rooted in the idea of natural law, that sex and procreation really belong together. And I'll come back and say some things about this in a bit, but the basic idea here is that there's an integrity to human sexuality, that we see a kind of design, that sex and procreation really are designed to be united. And that's going to rule out, in the world of reproductive technology, artificial insemination and the use of donor gametes, because in both of these instances, typically, you've got procreation taking place separated from sexual intercourse. Okay, again, if we go back to the two options for ovarian tissue transplantation, then I think, based on what I was just suggesting, as the reading of Donum Vitae, you would get a yes to the right-hand side, a no to the left. But I want to emphasize the yes on the right-hand side, because I think ovarian tissue transplantation, which in this case is referred to as orthotopic or autologous, it's being transferred back to the woman's body, not from a donor, it's her own tissue being transferred back to her body, that this is in some ways deeply consonant with Catholic teaching about the body. And I want to just read a brief little quote from Donum Vitae that highlights this, I think. Each human person, in his absolutely unique singularity, is constituted not only by his spirit, but by his body as well. Thus, in the body and through the body, one touches the person himself in his concrete reality. To respect the dignity of man consequently amounts to safeguarding this identity of the man as body and spirit together, or body and spirit as one, as the Second Vatican Council says. And that's the end of the quote. Now, I don't think it's much of a stretch to say that the effort to help a cancer survivor to have children after the fertility-ending effects of cancer treatment have taken place, that attempt is partly an effort to stitch back together a spiritual and bodily unity that cancer may have sundered. Nor is it a stretch to say that ovarian tissue transplantation and the return to reproductive function that it may facilitate profoundly touches the body, and thus the persons whose sense of bodily integrity and spiritual wholeness may have been deeply threatened by cancer. Now, I think it's important to say that because I don't want to take lightly the Catholic commitment to healing and wholeness here. And I think this is a mistake that critics of the tradition often make. If the Vatican raises concerns about ovarian tissue harvesting, I think there will be a tendency to dismiss those criticisms as manifestations of a kind of anti-technology bias in Catholic thought, a kind of almost Luddite tendency in the tradition. But in my view, I think that reading would be a mistake. Instead, if there's opposition, it's likely to be rooted in a concern about the reduction of procreation to a manufacturing process. And of course, that's just what ovarian tissue transplantation, or at least the autologous sort, where it's being transplanted back to the woman's body, that's exactly what that avoids. So in making the case for accepting such transplants, if we're going to make the argument that Catholic tradition should embrace them, I think that would be the direction to go, that this is technology that maintains the integrity of sexuality, and it promotes healing and wholeness. Now, one important caveat here is simply to note that this is still experimental. No one really should be undertaking ovarian tissue transplants except under an experimental protocol that's been approved by an institutional review board. But if there is a protocol available, if there is a research study underway which would allow a woman to enroll in this study, as with the Onco Fertility Consortium at Northwestern, I don't see any reason in terms of Catholic teaching that this should be a problem. But now, what about the left side of the diagram? Well, for all the reasons that we were talking about before in terms of those two values of donum vitae, the idea that the embryo is a person and that we need to respect that sex and procreation should remain together, which maintains the kind of importance of bodily, the importance of embodiment in human life and the way the human is a union of body and soul. Well, for those reasons, I think the left direction, turning to in vitro fertilization here, is going to be problematic. But even here, this technology leads us, I think, to reflect a bit more deeply about Catholic teaching. And to see why I say that, let me tell you about this series of studies that Sherman Silber is doing. I mentioned these before. Silber is doing a study in which I think he has 10 sets of monozygotic twins, so identical twins, where in each of these sets, one of the twins is fertile and the other is infertile. And what the twins have agreed to in enrolling in this study is to undergo ovarian tissue harvesting and transplant, and donating that tissue to their identical twin. So the first one of these was done a number of years ago, and the basic idea is this study allows Sherman to study transplanting fresh tissue, but also to compare the experience of transplanting fresh tissue with transplanting frozen tissue, because in each case they're harvesting tissue and then transplanting fresh tissue right away, but storing about two-thirds of the tissue in cryopreservation for later use. So down the road, we should have a good sense of how these two compare. Now, the case, I think, poses a fairly standard situation with modern biotechnology. That is, we have a new technology that confounds our traditional categories of thought. For instance, in this case, we might ask whether the child conceived is the offspring of the infertile twin. The infertile twin has produced a mature egg in her body, conceived an embryo through intercourse with her husband, sustained a pregnancy that resulted in a birth. In other words, in the traditional way in which she has given birth to a child who was begotten, not made. Nevertheless, the tissue containing the immature eggs came from another woman, namely her sister. But the case is complicated by the fact that the twins are identical and that it may not even be possible to identify which of the twins is the genetic mother of the child. So if we, with that case in mind, turn to the most recent document, Dignitas Personae, an instruction on bioethics that the Vatican issued in the fall of 2008, we can think about this case of identical twins in relation to some of the material set out in that document. Now, one of the interesting things along the way is the Vatican, the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith here, gives some examples of acceptable treatments: hormone treatment for infertility, surgery for treating endometriosis, unblocking of fallopian tubes surgically, and various others. And all these are said to be authentic interventions and thus acceptable. But now if we read, you know, why they're authentic, we read all these techniques may be considered authentic treatments because once the problem causing the infertility has been resolved, the married couple is able to engage in conjugal acts resulting in procreation without the physician's action directly interfering in that act itself. None of these treatments replaces the conjugal act, which alone is worthy of truly responsible procreation. Okay, fair enough. Now, if we take that language and apply it to the case of the identical twins with where there's ovarian tissue transplanted, it's going to meet that standard. You know, once the intervention is taken, conception follows through intercourse. The physician's act doesn't directly interfere. It doesn't replace the conjugal act. But of course, the tradition has also talked about the fact that genetic and social parenthood should not be separated. But at least in the past, this seemed to be about not disrupting the embodied love of the spouses, and not necessarily about genetic connection. And so what's sort of perplexing about the identical twin case is that essentially the genetic material is identical, and there's no disaggregation of gametes in the laboratory. Sexual intercourse results in procreation, and so I think this case helps us to think more deeply about what's at stake in the idea of keeping genetic and social parenthood together. It doesn't seem like it's really about the genes. That seems to involve a kind of genetic essentialism that wouldn't seem to be compatible with Catholic teaching. So my point here is to say, yes, if we go back a couple of slides to our split, at least at first blush, what we see is the tradition is likely to raise objections to thawing the tissue and going in the direction of an in vitro maturation of the follicles. And I think that's right. I think that's where the tradition is likely to come out. And yet I think this technology pushes us to think more carefully about what exactly is problematic about going in this direction. It's a, you know, the identical twin case isn't that, but the identical twin case helps us to begin to think more carefully about just what is at stake. So anyway, that is a basic introduction to ovarian tissue transplantation, the work of the Oncofertility Consortium, and at least a first take at what Catholic tradition might say about this. So thanks for listening and watching.